From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
The Syrian people practically by themselves have been fending off and fighting against international terrorism for several years now.
That was Russia's President Vladimir Putin speaking at a joint press conference in Moscow with Syria's President Bashar al-Assad.
Syria's been having serious losses, but lately it's been achieving serious positive results in this struggle as well.
The Syrian president expressed his gratitude to his Russian colleague for the military assistance that the Russian government has been providing to Damascus.
I would like to thank Russia's leadership and the Russian people for all the help they've given to Syria. Thank you for standing up for Syria and its independence. The most important thing is that it's done within international law. If not for your actions, terrorism that's now engulfed the region would have spread even further to a greater number of countries.
With more, we go to RT's Madina Kochanova, who reported from Moscow earlier today.
According to the Kremlin spokesman, now the Syrian leader informed his counterpart on the situation in Syria, on the situation on the ground, and both sides also discussed some further plans how to stabilize the situation. Now, Vladimir Putin once again stressed the growing threat of the spread of international terrorism, and he said that this issue has also put Russia's national interests, Russia's security interests, at stake here as well.
The attempts of international terrorism to control large territories in the Middle East and to destabilize the situation in the region draw concerns in many countries. Russia is also concerned about this, especially considering that there are at least 4,000 armed fighters who are now battling the Syrian government and are from the former Soviet republics. Of course, we cannot allow them to gain the experience at war and being ideologically influenced suddenly appear on Russian territory.
Well, very few details have come out of this, of the negotiations room. Now, of course, the agenda of the meeting was clearly understandable. According to the Kremlin spokesman, both sides discussed the situation in Syria and the current fight against the spread of ISIL in the region.
Sharp criticisms were raised at the New York headquarters of the United Nations Tuesday over the practices of the UN Security Council. We begin with this report from Veronica Reeves.
This year's annual meeting on the Security Council's working methods focused on a number of key themes, among them how to ensure the body could effectively fulfill its lofty mandate while also exercising transparency. Deputy Secretary General Jan Eliasson addressed the 15-member body.
When people think about the UN, they often think of the Security Council. On you rests a heavy responsibility to maintain international peace and security in a troubled, complex, an interconnected world.
The president of the General Assembly, Moins Likatov, pointed out that this was the first time in 8 years that the head of the Assembly had briefed the Council. He emphasized that the UN as a whole takes great interest in the Council's work.
We must never lose sight of the fact that at any given moment, some 178 members of the UN are not members of the Security Council, that some 35% of the membership have never even served as Council members.
Mr. Likatov said that interest in the work of the Council was even higher when a new Secretary General was due to be appointed. To that end, he called for greater cooperation in the year ahead as the Assembly and Council work to replace current UN Chief Ban Ki-moon at the end of 2016. Veronica Reeves, United Nations.
The ambassadors of two of the five permanent members of the Security Council, China and Russia, raised issues about its functioning, suggesting changes that could make the Council's efforts more effective. China's permanent representative to the UN, Liu Zhiyi, raised questions about the Council's apparent inefficiency in dealing with pressing global security issues, suggesting that it might be partly due to its taking on matters outside of its mandate, and partly as a result of a failure to find consensus among the members before acting, stressing the need to listen to the involved nations when considering peacekeeping projects.
Mr. President, China thanks Spain for its initiative for holding today's open debate. We have listened carefully to the statements of Deputy Secretary General Eliasson, the President of the GA, Mr. Likatov, and the Ambassador Jürgensen, Vice President of ECOSOC. With the joint efforts of its members in recent years, the Security Council has made good progress in improving its working methods. With more emphasis on increasing transparency, the Security Council has markedly increased the number of open meetings convened and paid more attention to briefing non-council members on its work. The improvement of working processes has made the work of the Council more efficient and targeted. The Council has also used various modalities to strengthen communication and exchanges with relevant member states, regional organizations, the General Assembly, and the ECOSOC, among others. The holding of today's open debate on its working methods fully reflected the positive attitude and willingness of the Council to draw on the opinions of wider membership to further improve its work. While supporting that the Council continue to improve its working methods, China would also like to emphasize the following few points. First, in accordance with its mandate under the UN Charter, the Council should focus its energy and resources on addressing the most urgent issues that threaten international peace and security. With regard to thematic issues, it should act strictly within its mandate and enhance communication with the General Assembly, the ECOSOC, the PBC, and others. With both coordination and division of labor, duplication or overlap of functions of different organs may be avoided. Second, the Council should attach more importance to preventive diplomacy and mediation. It should promote the culture of peace and increase the use of such peaceful means as mediation and good offices for dispute resolution and push for the diplomatic settlement of disputes. Avoid as much as possible resorting easily to the threat or use of such methods as sanctions. The Security Council should act in accordance with Chapter 8 of the Charter to enhance cooperation with regional organizations. Third, the Council should engage in more adequate consultations to reach broad consensus. Before any action, consensus should be tried as much as possible through patient consultations and negotiations among the members of the Security Council. Efforts should be made to avoid forcing attacks through when there are still major differences on it, so as to preserve the credibility and authoritativeness of the resolution of the Council. Fourth, the Council should give more weight to the opinions of the countries concerned and enhance dialogue and interaction with non-Council members. Listening to the opinions of the countries concerned will help the Council to make more rational decisions. Such mechanisms as the meeting with TCC and PCCs and the working group on the peacekeeping operations should be fully utilized. Communications with TCCs and the Secretariat should be enhanced before deploying in peacekeeping missions or adjusting their mandates. Thank you, Mr. President.
Russia's ambassador to the UN, Vitaly Churkin, criticized the U.S. for what he called its attempt to force the selection of the next UN Secretary General prematurely. He also accused the U.S., the U.K., and France of usurping top UN positions in the Secretary General's office. Churkin also slammed the U.S. for abusing its powers as the U.N.'s host country, including bias in the issuance of visas to visitors to the international organization's New York headquarters.
Thank you, President. First of all, let me commend you on convening today's discussion. We've seen a true revolution in the working methods of the Council when Angola spoke on behalf of six of the members. Such initiatives should be supported. For example, it seems it could be copied by the new members entering the Council from the European Union. Now, President, for some years now, the Security Council has been discussing the theme of improving its working methods in an open format. We believe that a periodical stocktake of working practices as well as an external audit helps Council members to define those areas where there is room for improvement. However, we think it's necessary once again to clearly say the working methods and working methods themselves and decisions on their possible modification are the preserve of the Security Council. We firmly believe that the only goal of reforming the Security Council working methods should be improving its effectiveness and efficiency in carrying out the tasks to maintain international peace and security, which are the primary responsibility of the Council in compliance with the Charter. Letting ourselves get swept away with populism will only harm our action. So we've heard criticism of the Council that at times it treads on the prerogatives of other bodies of the UN. We fully share these concerns. Our colleagues in the Council know fine well that we are very cautious when it comes to consideration in the Security Council of thematic subjects, particularly those which rightly should fall within the remit of the General Assembly. Today we heard about plans to discuss in the Security Council the theme of the Sustainable Development Agenda. It's Goal 16 specifically. Not to mention, this isn't a matter for the Security Council. This kind of discussion is planned months before the 2030 Agenda has even officially been launched, while the specialised bodies, the General Assembly and the High-Level Political Forum on Sustainable Development under the aegis of ECOSOC, have received the possibility to begin working on a mechanism for conducting a review of the implementation of the goals. We cannot support such initiatives in the Security Council, which seriously undermine the charter prerogatives of the General Assembly and ECOSOC. That issue needs to be treated. That issue needs to be treated extremely seriously. Now, we must also recognise that many Security Council meetings devoted to thematic subjects receive a big response among member states. The number of speakers at open-ended debates can reach 100. On such days, the General Assembly seems to just move into the Council chamber. Wouldn't it be better to hold such discussions in the General Assembly chamber, where all can speak on an equal footing? And as to revitalisation of the General Assembly, revitalisation of the General Assembly will have an additional opportunity. There's another negative trend here. The dragging into the Security Council of the General Assembly agenda draws the Council and its members away from fulfilling their main tasks, focusing on country subjects and issues on which it can and must take urgent and tangible decisions. Perhaps due to lack of time and possibility for in-depth, patient investment of efforts into mechanisms for peaceful settlement of each conflict situation, the Council increasingly often, at the initiative of a number of countries, is pushed into adopting rushed decisions based on invoking Chapter 7 of the Charter and implementing sanction mechanisms. The effectiveness of such decisions leaves a lot to be desired. Often they lead to just worsening the crises. In recent months, there's been a lot of commotion over the selection of a new UN Secretary General. Moreover, at times, the discussion is not on substantive technical issues. Now, the Secretary General still has over a year left in his mandate. However, a number of delegations seem intent on launching the process for his election right now. We don't think there's any practical value in this, other than point scoring for those who are promoting those initiatives. Furthermore, we shouldn't be creating further pressure on the current Secretary General, or still less, import into the UN the concept of lame duck, as the saying goes, in certain countries whose political systems are hardly paragons of effectiveness. Now, what we should really be focusing on in the context of choosing the new Secretary General is the necessity for further democratisation of the work of the Secretariat. It can't be considered normal when you have a situation with three key positions, USGs for peacekeeping, political and humanitarian affairs, are effectively usurped by three countries. We believe that to maintain the effectiveness and legitimacy of the work of the Secretariat, we need to rotate these and certain other senior posts in the Secretariat among all UN member states. It's important to make the process of their appointment more transparent. Sir, overall, we're satisfied with relations between the Security Council and the UN Secretariat. The leadership of the organisation is always available to us and has an opportunity to approach the Security Council on any issues. And we welcome the work of the Security Council Political Affairs Division. Now, however, we would like to draw attention to one other aspect of the UN's work. The Secretariat is a gracious host, offering its premises at headquarters for events organised by member states on a broad range of issues. However, we should need to understand that when holding such events, all members of the organisation, bar none, must respect the rules of the House.
In that respect, we think it's unacceptable that at the event organised by the US delegation on 29th September, an event on combating violent extremism, notwithstanding protests by the Secretariat leadership and certain delegations, they invited representatives of the self-declared Kosovo, Kosovo which is not a UN member. Kosovo Albanian representatives cannot be allowed onto UN territory unless they, in certain cases, when they are accompanied by Secretariat officials. Such action by the US is an abuse of their position as host country of the UN. And shows a glaring disrespect towards the Secretariat leadership. We call for an end to such high-handedness. But then when there is a real need to hear the opinions of new independent states which aren't UN members, the US then tends to erect visa barriers. So every year, Georgia brings before the GA a draft resolution on refugees which cannot be considered without inviting representatives from Abkhazia and South Ossetia to New York. They need to have the opportunity to have their say, even if it's only in special informal events at headquarters. The same goes for participation of NGOs in the work of the UN. You get a situation where countries who you'd think were the biggest proponents of participation of civil society, in actual fact, block appearances by NGOs that hold different views to their own. Now, objective picture of those who want to be objective, then they should give the NGOs representing the opinion of the overwhelming majority of the population of Crimea, for example, could be allowed to speak within UN's walls. Now, we've taken note of the difference in approach to countries on the Security Council agenda. Sadly, there is a selective approach here. Some of our partners, for example, have objected to duly reflecting the opinion of African states when developing a Security Council position. Those states that are hosting peacekeeping operations, such as Sudan, South Sudan, DRC, and others, often the African Union position isn't even heeded. Moreover, on other issues, the position of third countries conveys through members of the Council, on the contrary, acquire exaggerated significance, and they become an obstacle to adopting necessary decisions. We call on our colleagues in the Council to be consistent and principled in such issues, and to be guided exclusively by the need to bolster international peace and security. Sir, we are consistently advocate for improving coordination of the activities of the Security Council with the broadest possible circle of member states, as well as with representatives who, as part of their powers, can provide to the Council important information for adoption of decisions. For that, the Council does have a relevant mechanism, including unofficial meetings under the so-called ARIA formula. However, in recent years, unfortunately, there's been a growing trend to use such meetings for holding propaganda shows when, with reference to the Security Council, certain delegations try and promote their own unilateral positions. Moreover, the costs for using premises of UN headquarters and conference services in certain cases for interpreters too are met from the UN regular budget. So in other words, all of us taxpayers seem to be subsidising foreign political actions by certain states. This is unacceptable, and we call on our colleagues to use the ARIA formula exclusively for its original goals, namely to provide greater clarity to the Security Council on the Council's agenda. We believe that the Council would benefit from democratizing its work. This would be helped by more balanced distribution of obligations on so-called penholdership of certain dossiers. Certain Council members shouldn't consider countries or even regions as their own patch, or act as mentors on issues concerning them. This kind of conduct is a remnant of days gone by that we need to abandon. And, President, in conclusion, just briefly on the veto, since that theme has been raised today, although we think that does not apply, we don't think it applies to the section working methods, the veto is one of the key provisions of the Charter that prompts Council members to reach consensus. I'll just say one thing. It's clear why undermining the right of veto is the goal of those who want to seek a mathematical majority in the Council. It's unclear why the veto at times is criticised by representatives of those countries or regions who, in the absence of the veto, would find themselves under huge pressure by a certain group of states. Sir, think about your own national interests. Thank you, President.
Venezuela's UN Ambassador Rafael Dario Ramirez Carreño, speaking on behalf of his country and other member states of UNASUR and in support of the position of Iran as head of the non-aligned states, called for the inclusion of voices from the African Union and other organizations of the Global South in the Council's deliberations on threats to peace and security. The Venezuelan ambassador also called for a larger role for the General Assembly in the selection of the next Secretary General.
The Bolivarian Republic of Venezuela also supports the statement to be made by the Islamic Republic of Iran on behalf of the non-aligned movement. Mr. President, faced with the complex challenges in the area of international peace and security, which call for effective and timely responses by this body to the specific resolution of conflicts, our country prizes the holding of this debate on the working methods of the Security Council. This exchange makes it possible to reaffirm the need to strengthen working relations of this body with other members of the United Nations and the main bodies of this multilateral institution in the framework of their respective mandates. Though we recognize that progress has been made in the working methods of the Security Council as shown documents adopted and among them S/2010/507, we believe that they are quite distant from the magnitude of the challenges that arise, and we need to find effective formulas promoting greater transparency and inclusivity, which respond to the opinions of collective interests of members of the organization. We also must overcome the long-extended provisional nature of the rules of the Security Council, which have been provisional for 70 years. We must adopt a definite text which will regulate the work of this body and put an end to the exaggerated discretional nature of its actions. Despite these calls, there are still some obstacles, such as lack of transparency, which have a negative effect on the working dynamic of the Security Council and ultimately on the results of their execution. At times, processes of negotiating draft resolutions have lacked the necessary inclusivity, since the discussions were confined to a group of actors without bearing in mind the opinions of the other non-permanent members of the Security Council. Since the unity of the Council is an important element to achieve its objectives of maintaining international peace and security, this can only be achieved with full participation of all its members. In this vein, we insist on the need to put an end to these practices of exclusion which act against transparency and inclusivity. Mr. President, we must devote attention to the sanctions committees. The main purpose of these subsidiary bodies of the Council in these exceptional situations in which they are created should be assisting a political solution to conflict. Sanctions committees only should exist hand in hand with an ongoing political process. In other words, their objectives should be clearly circumscribed and they should have a clear end date. However, this is quite different from the actual practice of the Council. Once they are created, sanctions committees, for whatever reason, can extend for decades, if some of the permanent members so desire. The remaining members, the elected members, can do little to prevent this. Although they may be chairs of the committees, they have little, if no, power to do things differently. Elected members of the Security Council can do little to change such imbalances because of the opposition of factors of power, which make it impossible to undertake the needed improvements. Sanctions cannot be used as a political instrument against countries and their peoples. They cannot be seen as an end unto themselves, but rather as an instrument bound to the solution of the conflict. Another issue we have to review is the power wielded by penholders, a few permanent members who decide who, what, and how the mandates are created and considered. At times, with little consideration for the opinion of the other members. Practices of the Council are based on consensus reached through negotiations. This is the reason why we believe a deep democratization of the working methods of the Security Council is urgently needed. Mr. President, bearing in mind that international peace and security affect all members of the organization in accordance with the principle of sovereign equality between states, it is important for the Security Council to hold open or public sessions more frequently so that countries, especially countries whose cases are being considered, can make contributions to dealing with these issues in order to achieve a peaceful resolution of these conflicts. This is why it is paradoxical that even though the African Union is a strategic partner of the United Nations, it has not been possible for his representative, former President Joaquin Chissano, to speak at the information session on the Western Sahara, which was held in April of this year. It is our hope that the participation of Mr. Chissano will be possible at the next meeting on this issue and that this kind of situation will not repeat itself. Moreover, Venezuela believes that troop-contributing countries, in accordance with Article 44 of the Charter, should be able to participate in Security Council decisions on the use of contingents in peacekeeping operations. In this vein, we support the call of these countries to realize the content of this article in practice. This will lead to better functioning of the Security Council and its instruments for the promotion of peace. Mr. President, the relationship between the Security Council, the General Assembly, and ECOSOC should be based in respect for their competencies. This is why the Council should deal strictly with those issues having to do with threats to international peace and security, in accordance with Article 39 of the Charter. We are concerned at the tendency that this body has to deal with issues outside its competence, which are proper to the General Assembly and the ECOSOC, and considering them from a security point of view, as happened with Resolution 2240 of this year on migrants, recently approved by this Council, with Venezuela abstaining. We see the interaction between the Security Council and other main bodies in terms of balance and respect for the functions established in accordance with the Charter. In the context of a close, harmonious relationship between the Security Council and the General Assembly, we want to highlight the important role of the General Assembly in the election of the next Secretary General of the United Nations. The consultations, guided by principles of transparency and inclusivity, should start as quickly as possible by sending a joint communication of the presidents of both bodies, including a description of the process as a whole, also inviting candidates to present themselves in a timely fashion in accordance with Resolution A, Res. 69321. We are thus convinced that the General Assembly should play a more active role in this area, such that it will not simply support the recommendation made by the Security Council. The General Assembly should have the possibility of selecting among several candidates. Bearing in mind a geographic balance, and we also firmly support the nomination of female candidates for this position. Venezuela also believes that the review of the mechanism for taking decisions in the Security Council or the veto could have a positive influence on the interaction between this body and the General Assembly in the framework of its working methods. Above all, the competency, the jurisdiction of the General Assembly. In this vein, we want to highlight the fact that the threat of the use of the veto has made it impossible for the legitimate aspiration of the state of Palestine to be admitted as a full member of the United Nations has been impeded, even though it is supported by an overwhelming majority of its memberships. To conclude, Mr. President, Venezuela advocates a body with a more balanced focus, avoiding the application of double standards in considering issues before it. In this vein, we hope to see a Security Council which will take into account the viewpoints of all its members, as well as the diverse geographic, political, and cultural realities of this world. Thank you very much, Sam.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.